and you are tuning into Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from the very top of Burnaby Mountain.
We're stoked to be your host for the next hour, exploring local and global events using sociological perspectives. Thanks for tuning in.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we are located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. I hope you've all had a wonderful Tuesday. I know for a lot of students it's the start of the new semester, so I hope the start of the new semester is going great. And for people who are not students starting a new semester, I still hope you're having a great day and it's coming to an end. Or if you're listening not from BC, you're having a great morning, midday, wherever you are. I am Rebecca and I'm going to be your host for the next hour up until 8 p.m. And I have what some might consider to be a kind of dark topic today. So I am going to place a trigger warning right here in case you do not want to be listening to this topic and you want to tune out and tune back in at 8 p.m. for Bitcoover. That is because I'm going to be talking about female serial killers. I'm going to be talking along the topics of rape, murder, abuse, serial killers. And that can not be a topic for everybody. And that's okay. So if you do not want to listen to that, feel free to tune out. You can tune back in once the hour is up. You could put on another Sociologic episode from the CJSF website, cjsf.ca. There is plenty to choose from that are much more lighthearted than this one. So yeah, I would recommend tuning out if this is not something that you want to be listening to. I'm going to be talking about one particular case study that's a very famous one called Eileen Wuornos. She's an American serial killer, probably one of the most well-known ones. I'm going to be talking about two sociological theories that very directly correlate with her case in explaining female serial killers and why women turn to killing in some instances. This is going to be a part one as well. I'm going to do the part two of this next week because this is a topic that personally I find really fascinating. I have touched upon it a little bit on Intravenous. I had a module on it at my degree back at home in Loughborough called Women and Crime, and it really was an interesting module that I think I can't get as deep into the topic as I would like in just 1 hour. So we do have quite a bit of music kind of like slotted in there too. Because I've kind of divided it into two sections where I'm going to kind of talk about sociological explanations relating it all to the Eileen Wuornos case tonight. And then next week, I will be talking more about the media representation and a theory that kind of really links well into that and how the media and legal narratives towards female serial killers and female violent offenders in general kind of perpetuate a certain message and ideology that they want you to take away and how it's impacting their treatment in the judicial system. So that will be the part two of this. So this is going to be a two-part episode. But yeah, this one's just going to be on the kind of, I would say, touching upon introducing the topic of female serial killers with some theories that I have spoken about on Sociologic before with Kaylin in a theory deep dive and talking about why women turn to killing, because there's also different forms of women killing in terms like you have women that turn to killing males, you have women that turn to killing infants, and you have women turning to killing newborns, and also women turning to killing women. And in the infants and newborns, you also have that as their own children and also not their own children. So there's so many different areas to go into. And you cannot touch upon all of that even in two episodes. But there's different theories that apply to each different type. There's different case studies that go along with that to kind of better show you how the theories are applied. So, yeah. I'm going to just be focusing on Eileen Wuornos and women that are serial killers towards men tonight. And we're going to talk about why they've gone into that. And yeah, I'm going to be touching upon a research paper that was written as well that heavily went in on this with several case studies of really well-known American serial killers. I think a British one was in there as well. So yeah, that is what is going to be tonight's episode. Once again, it's a very kind of dark and, I'd say, harsh topic, so it is not going to be for everybody. Please tune out. You have been warned. If this is not something that you want to be either listening to ever or just spending your evening listening to, I will not be offended. Not everyone is interested in these kind of areas as I am. So, yeah, if you just don't want to listen to it this evening, it will be uploaded onto the Sociologic website on cjsf.ca, so you can listen to it another time, or just pick another Sociologic episode to listen to tonight if you don't ever want to listen to this, which is fully understandable. And we've got a nice mix of music as well. I've got a lot of CanCon to play today, quite a bit of FemCon too, and I've slotted in some English and Irish as always because I'm bringing my roots over here in terms of the music from the United Kingdom, and that will be a kind of, I think, mainly indie rock. I've been talking a lot about UK indie rock here at the station with a couple of different people, so it made me reminisce and go back to my indie rock playlist that my friend made me way back when. I think we were 16, 17, so some old, well, not super old, but older music, and then obviously the fresh stuff from the playlist. So before we start, well, I start talking about today's topic, we are going to listen to the band from London called The Hunna. If you have been listening to me for a while, you will know I absolutely adore this band. I love them so much. I think they're severely underrated, so I definitely think everyone should go check them out. This is going to be the song She's Casual off of the album 100. And then after that, I will have two songs from the playlist, one called The Wheel by the artist 36? Off of the album Finding Love and Having Autism. And then I'll have Over Ocean Waves by Holly Kenneth off of her album For Forever. And then we'll get right into the topic.
Every night I feel the same. My girl turns and walks away. Every time I hear her name, it's without her. And all she does is play these games. It's always been a claim to fame. Every time I hear her name, it's disaster. She makes my heartbeat go faster. The thing is, I trust her. Because she's casual, she likes it. Mine and she knows it. Gives when I need it. Says to me, can you feel it? She's casual, but she don't mind. And from the dark to the morning light, she waits beside me.
She's casual, she likes.
Mine and she knows it. Gives when I need it. Says to me, can you feel it. future.
Welcome back to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I am Rebecca and I'm going to be your host up until 8 p.m. Now, those songs you just heard were the song She's Casual by the London band The Hunna, and then Over Ocean Ways by Holly Kenneth, and then that last one was The Wheel by 36 question mark. And just a really quick reminder for anyone that has just tuned in, I am going to be talking about some kind of sensitive and hard topics tonight, including female serial killers, abuse, rape, murder. So if that is not your cup of tea for this evening or at all, please tune out and tune back in at 8 p.m. for Bitcoover. You can always play another Sociologic episode from the playlist. Starting us off, I want to go into kind of the basic theories that I will be associating with the Eileen Wuornos case. So we're going to start off with Durkheim's anomie theory that became one of the fundamental building blocks to future sociological theories like Merton's string theory. That is the other one I want to talk about today. So Durkheim's anomie theory, it is a perspective that uses principles of social disorganization to explain deviance within society. This is because his theory is based in the concept of moral norms and values maintaining social stability and cohesion. I have gone into more depth in this on the Durkheim Functionalism Theory deep dive that's on the website with Kaelin. There's a whole hour where we are pulling apart Durkheim, his anomie theory, and his whole kind of founding father concepts of sociology and functionalism. So if you want to hear more in depth about that, please go listen to the theory deep dive that is on our playlist on the website. Now, this state of social disintegration that happens, it's a state of normlessness in society that is explained through its anomie theory. This state, members of society cannot reach their goals by using traditional or legitimate means. So the individual chooses to turn to alternative, illegitimate means in order to achieve the values that are set by society because there is this pressure to achieve them. Now, women are seen as less likely to turn to deviance as a result to anomie than men from these societal norms and values. So because of this, those women that do feel anomie and do turn to deviance are classed as an asocial occurrence by Durkheim. So this adds to the complex explorations into how and why women become serial killers, because serial killers are obviously a form of deviancy. There are around, I think, 15% of serial killers are women compared to the 85% that are men. So it's a significantly smaller amount. And you're wondering why, when the people are feeling anomie, that women feel it a lot less, one. But two, if they are feeling it, why are they choosing to go into a state of deviance? But moreover, why are they choosing that such an extreme state of deviance rather than more subtle deviance like theft, which is still bad, but like less bad than murder, but like theft, vandalism, things like that. And so Durkheim explaining it as an asocial occurrence is because it's so rare that it's kind of an anomaly. Like, that's not what was supposed to happen when he explains his theory, because he thinks society relies almost on deviance to keep social order. But not he only a certain extent and only a certain type. And then Merton's strain theory, that is developed from Durkheim's anomie theory. And through Merton's research, he aimed to discover how some social structures are exerting a definitive pressure upon certain people in society to engage in non-conforming conduct rather than conforming conduct. Now, this argues that deviance and crime is stemming from the inability to achieve the goals of monetary success, a middle-class status, or both. Now, with a lack of opportunities, with financial hardships, and with a dysfunctional upbringing, these can all lead to individuals being unable to live up to the expectations and demands of society, so the norms and values of society. And therefore, they'll then end up being viewed as a failure in the eyes of society. So this causes them to then feel a sense of tension and a strain, hence the name strain theory, because they haven't been able to fulfill the societal expectations of them, such as obtaining an education, finding a stable job, being financially independent, building a loving home and family. These are all very stereotypical values of society. And this strain will then lead a person to commit deviance as a way to obtain the goals, or simply to survive within society if they can't find a stable income. Or they turn to deviance as a coping mechanism to deal with their feelings of failure in the eyes of society. So the feelings of normlessness and anomie that Durkheim was exploring in his theory were very crucial to Merton's strain theory, because he felt that the strain individuals felt could lead them to create their own set of norms to achieve their own values in life. And there's a whole other kind of sub-theory to this by a different sociologist in regard to the illegitimate opportunity structure, where people cannot legitimately follow and achieve the goals in society in the ways that it was intended. So they form their own illegitimate goals and their own illegitimate means of achieving those goals. So it's like a kind of flip side to functionalism and Durkheim's explanations there. So looking at the case study of Eileen Wuornos, I'm going to talk a bit about her case and who she was, if anyone doesn't know what she was obviously a serial killer, that's what I'm talking about, but what her killing involved, what was said in the trials and things, and kind of the story that is being pieced together, to get a bit of an idea about, you can kind of see her background and things. So anyway, she was falsely dubbed as the first female serial killer. She is not the first female serial killer. There are a lot of studies of going into back into like medieval female serial killers and things. But she's dubbed the first female serial killer, and she attracted enormous attention. And this was during the early 1990s. And she had a very traumatic family upbringing. But after being arrested in 1991, she admitted to killing 7 men that she had met while she'd been hitchhiking and prostituting, claiming she had committed those murders in self-defense as the men had become violent or either attempted slash actually raped her. Now, you notice that she's confessed, that she does admit that she just kills them. But this confession was actually only prompted by a phone call that she was allowed to make to her lesbian girlfriend, Tyria Moore, while she was in custody, because she was determined to prove to her girlfriend she hadn't cheated on her. And she confessed that she had such a strong love for her girlfriend that she didn't want her girlfriend to view her any differently. Hence, she confessed to killing them in self-defense. Now, Eileen Wuornos went through several kind of stages of prostitution, which was leading her to interact with these men that she's killed throughout her life. And this is because she was suffering with addiction that she was trying to fund. And she had a failed marriage. She'd received life insurance settlement from her granddad, who died, as he'd legally adopted her and her brother after her mother had abandoned them. And their father had died. But that money didn't last very long, so she had to go back to prostitution after that. So she was kind of in and out of prostitution throughout her life in trying to fund her surviving and her addiction. And after she received her life insurance settlement and that had run out, she realized that her prostitution wasn't making her enough money. So she decided to hold up in a small supermarket in Florida, where she was quickly arrested for armed robbery, and she spent the next few years in prison. Now, this kind of arrest was a turning point in her life, because she then became a very devout Christian. She started to read the Bible, became this kind of new person after being in prison for a few years, and then she got out. And this did not last, this new person, essentially. She was very quickly after being released charged with check forgery, grand theft auto, and attempting to rob her boyfriend at gunpoint. And it was after this, after she tried to rob her boyfriend at gunpoint when she's around 28 years old, that she decides to try and find love with women rather than men. Which is when she met her 24-year-old girlfriend, Tyria Moore. Now, they pretty much were together since the day they met. They moved in very quickly afterwards, and she asked Tyria to quit her job because she wanted to provide for the both of them through her prostitution. Now, as we all know, prostitution, sex work, street sex work, anything like that, is not going to be the safest